Please the court. Your honors, the district court committed plain error by ordering the administration of forced medication to Mr. Mann. Specifically, the district court committed two errors. First, the court erred by ordering forced medication to restore competence without requiring the government to hold a Harper hearing first on whether involuntary medication was warranted based on dangerousness. Second, the court erred by failing to require the government to exhaust its administrative remedies under the 1992 regulations and have the Bureau of Prisons conduct a hearing on medication to restore competence. With regard to the first error on the Harper hearing, or the failure to hold one, Harper approved involuntary medication based on dangerousness based on the multiple procedural protections that were in place for Mr. Harper. In Sell, the Supreme Court made clear that a court or a Harper hearing is to be conducted first on dangerousness before there is a determination based on medication to restore competence. The court held that it's more manageable, that the expert opinion will assist the court later, and as the Ninth Circuit made clear in Loeffner and Hernandez-Vasquez, Sell orders are disfavored because there's more chance of error, and Harper orders and hearings are more precise because they involve a medical determination.
Isn't Sell fairly read to encourage what you just said, but not to require it?
Your Honor, if you're saying that they don't categorically say must in every case, they say ordinarily or something like that, or unless there are certain circumstances. I agree with Your Honor, if that's what you're asking. It doesn't say categorically in every case, but I think that's how it's been interpreted. Certainly the Ninth Circuit and Loeffner and Hernandez-Vasquez gave good reason why the Harper hearing should come first, because it's a determination made by medical experts. And the Supreme Court, I think, made that clear, that it's more manageable, it's medical experts making a medical determination based on competence, and courts are used to dealing with that sort of determination.
Well, of course, we did have a Harper hearing in this case, and it said he was not dangerous to himself or others, and that's been part of the debate. Explain why that isn't sufficient.
Your Honor, as a preface, I'd like to say I hope the court has gotten the chronology I passed out, and that's just to assist the court with the dates. And to answer your question, the Harper hearing took place on January 6th, of 2011 and found that Mr. Mann was not a danger to himself and others. Subsequent to that, the Bureau of Prisons recommended forced medication to make Mr. Mann competent. The government's pleadings and hearings through March of 2011 harped on dangerousness. They said Mr. Mann's behavior was accelerating, that he was dangerous to himself and others. And then in May, I believe, the district court said, I'm not going to grant the government's motion. I'm going to release Mr. Mann. So the court let Mr. Mann go. Subsequent to that, the government filed another pleading in August, on August 29th, in which they harped on dangerousness again. They said Mr. Mann is a danger. He told his mechanic he was going to the federal courthouse to kill people. And they asked that he be medicated because he was incompetent, but based on arguments of dangerousness. So since that's the government's pleading on reconsideration, I think that the hearing was held 9 months after the Harper hearing, and they're saying he's a danger, medicate him, they should have had another Harper hearing. And that's really the issue. The old Harper hearing did not consider the post release of Mr. Mann evidence that Mr. Mann was a danger. In fact, let's assume that it wasn't a motion for reconsideration. Let's say the government said, Mr. Mann is out on release, on no bond. He went to a mechanic, said he's going to go down to the federal courthouse. He's a danger. You should medicate him. New motion, forget the old motions. You would conduct a Harper hearing. You would want a Harper hearing because the government is saying he's dangerous. The government putting a title, reconsideration, on top of that motion doesn't change what the government's asking for. They're saying medicate this person based on dangerousness. The court made a second error, Your Honors. Under the 1992 regulations, the government was required to hold a hearing on forced medication to restore competence at the Bureau of Prisons. And it could have done this at the same time it held a Harper hearing on January 6th. It just chose not to. Under this Court's decision in Gutierrez 1, the government was required to hold that hearing. And it's important because the difference, first of all, this Court in Gutierrez talked about the two layers, the administrative layer for determining competence and the judicial layer, and said that that was important under the 1992 regulations. In addition, the 1992 regulations gave Mr. Mann a plethora of procedural rights. It gave him the right to be present. It gave him right of notice. It gave him the right, and this is, I think, important, it gave him the right to have a representative at the administrative hearing who was knowledgeable in psychology or psychology, or at least understood the medical issues. It allowed his representative at the medical hearing to question witnesses. It allowed him an administrative appeal. It allowed him the right to have someone help him prepare that appeal. All of that was ignored by the Bureau of Prisons, and Mr. Mann was deprived of his rights under the 19.
It certainly complied. What they did in this respect complied with the subsequent regulation.
That's true, Your Honor, and I don't contend that it didn't. The new regulations, the 2011 regulations, have Harper. You have to hold a Harper hearing in the Bureau of Prisons, and then the Bureau of Prisons will medicate for competence if it gets a district court's order. So, yes, the new regulations undid the 1992 regulations with regard to competence. But what this Court said in Gutierrez applies here. Everything in this case occurred, except for the motion for reconsideration and the hearing on the motion for reconsideration, everything in this case occurred when the 1992 regulations were in effect. And that's important.
But there was a clear break in title here when the Court said, okay, turn him loose. You know, I guess I'm done, at least for the time being I'm done. Turn him loose. Clear break. Then there's another, then the whole thing starts all over again.
Well, it didn't start all over again.
It didn't in the sense that he didn't hold another Harper hearing, but.
They didn't hold another Harper hearing, and they used the materials that were prepared during the time that the 1992 regulations were in effect. So what you have is, and I agree, there is a gap in time where Mr. Mann's out, and then there's a motion for reconsideration. But the motion for reconsideration recounts what the government, not only the new evidence on dangerousness, but recounts what the government previously alleged in its prior motions and reminds the Court of what it alleged previously. So the government harps back to what it claimed while the 1992 regulations were in effect. And I think the important thing here is what the Court said in Gutierrez 1. The Court said that the government cannot ignore its own regulations and then go about passing new regulations to excuse itself. Here we have the same situation as you had on remand in Gutierrez. The government does everything to try to forcibly medicate Mr. Mann while the 1992 regulations are in effect. They change the regulations, and then they say, okay, now we're free. We don't have to do it. There's no distinction between the remand in Gutierrez to conduct the proper hearing in the Bureau of Prisons and the motion for reconsideration here.
Well, let me ask you a question. Let's assume that none of what happened in the early stage of this case happened. So we have the defendant making noises about blowing up the courthouse or whatever his plan was for that building. And the judge, they tell the judge, this guy's a problem. He's reverted, or at least he's a problem. Now, does the judge at that point, can the judge simply order him to be forcibly medicated to restore competence to without, I mean, I guess there's already been one Harper hearing. I'm undoing my own question.
Yeah. Let me see if I can answer it.
Can you just go straight to the competency to be tried issue without addressing the dangerousness issue.
Okay, just to clarify the court's hypothetical so I make sure I understand it,
that's
Your Honor.
Sure, because it needs clarifying.
Okay, the regulations changed in August of 2011.
Right.
So let's say Mr. Mann is charged with felon in possession of a firearm in, let's just say, January 2012, right? Is that, and we're under the new regulations.
Right.
And they send him off to the Bureau of Prisons. They say incompetent. They send him back. The judge says, okay, I'm sending him back to the Bureau of Prisons for 4 months to be made competent. He goes back. He says, I don't want any medication. Okay. At that point, they should hold a Harper hearing. The judge can't say competence. The new regulations keep in force the old regulation on Harper.
Oh, okay. That was my question.
Yeah. So they've got to hold a Harper hearing. Now, they might find he's not a danger. And if they find that, they're going to send him back to, they're going to say, under the new regulations, we don't deal with cell. You deal with cell. So they'll send him back, and then there'll be a cell hearing. But under the old, or and I should make this clear, Mr. Mann's claim here is that under the old or the new regulations, they should have conducted a Harper hearing when, post his release, when the government said, here's new evidence of dangerousness, his behavior is accelerating, he's a danger to himself and others, his brother says some law enforcement officer might get hurt or a law enforcement officer might hurt him, you should medicate him to make him competent, which to me sounds, I mean, it's just, you read the pleading and it's a non sequitur. It's like he's dangerous and he's causing problems and he needs to be medicated to make him competent. Well, that's not the way the law works. If it's dangerousness, then it goes back for a Harper hearing. Your Honors, with regard to plain error, clearly Mr. Mann was deprived of his substantial rights. He had substantial rights to have a Harper hearing. He had substantial rights to have the due process competency hearing. And we set out in this in our briefs why this is much like Sell, where the judge confused competence and dangerousness, and the Supreme Court reversed and remanded because the judge confused both. For all of these reasons, Your Honors, if the Court has no further questions, I would request.
Let me ask one question. Didn't the judge, in effect, change his mind? Was it he? Judge Hoyt?
Judge Hoyt, yes.
Didn't he change his mind about whether this was a serious offense? I mean, he decided, I have to say, until this case, I never understood that if you decide somebody's not dangerous, but he's also not competent, you can just turn him loose. I didn't, somehow or other, I hadn't figured that out. I've never had the situation, I guess. But apparently you can just turn him loose.
I believe the counsel below in our office filed a pleading that cited a Supreme Court case that said you just can't hold someone indefinitely and not medicate them, and I think that's what Judge Hoyt relied on.
Okay. So then he apparently decided that this was not a serious enough offense to try him and therefore to have to restore his competency. And then decided after he gets this information about he's out there causing trouble, decided, look, this is a serious offense. Let's just go forward.
I'm not sure.
Is that what happened?
Well, I'm not sure why Judge Hoyt released Mr. Mann. I mean, there's nothing. I don't think his, and I stand to be corrected, Your Honor, but I don't think his order releasing Mr. Mann gives a ground.
I don't think it does either.
Yeah, so I'm not sure why he did that.
Did it.
Yeah. Your Honors, for all these reasons, I request that you reverse the district court and remand for further proceedings. Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right. Ms. Wilson.
May it please the court. No plain error occurred here. The district court correctly ordered, pursuant to Sell, that Mann be voluntarily medicated to restore his competency. The 2011 regulations controlled the issue. The new regulation became effective on August 12, 2011, so it was firmly in place on August 26, 2011, a couple weeks later, when Mann told a mechanic that he was coming down to the Houston Federal Courthouse to kill everybody. Now, under the new regulation, The BOP can involuntarily administer medication without following the administrative procedures if a district court orders a defendant's competency restored for trial. So, in response to some of your questions, Judge King, the district court, Judge Hoyt, could enter that order to restore his competency without some of the, let's call them the Harper administrative procedures. They disappear if it's just to restore his competency. The stated purpose of this August regulation is to follow.
Before we get to that, though, what the government filed was a motion to reconsider?
Yes, but what's important to remember here.
But a motion to reconsider says to the court, I want you to revisit a decision that you've already made, and I want to re-urge to you the incorrectness of that decision.
Well,
so we're talking about a decision that was made prior to the new regulations, aren't we?
That is correct. The title of the motion was that, but of course titles have never controlled anything. But what's also important is to look.
It wasn't a motion to reconsider.
Well, what the court also needs to be mindful here is that after the Harper hearing, which was in January, and we go to March now, in March there's talk about involuntarily medicating Mr. Mann. At that time, Mann, defense counsel, his only complaint was that the government had not met the first prong of the cell factors, meaning that there was not a sufficient government interest at stake. That is what the government responded to in March. And so that's what all the discussion was between them. There was never any contention from Mann's counsel that Mr. Mann was competent. In fact, if the court looks at, I believe it's docket entry number 5, page 4, all of this is sealed, defense counsel talks about how his client is incompetent. So that's never an issue. He never makes a complaint that the Harper hearing was somehow inadequate, that they hadn't visited this prong as the defense did in Gutierrez. What we had was the Harper hearing in January that focused on dangerousness and a couple other things, and did not focus on competency, which both of us agreed upon in our briefs, that the neutral psychiatrist never discussed competency. But after we move out of that, the evaluators, however, his treating physician, or, you know, the treating psychiatrist and the psychologist, did think he was incompetent and did discuss the three cell factors, which Judge Hoyt subsequently relied on when he formulated the plan for his treatment. He goes back to that. So what we have, just to kind of reiterate, is in January after the Harper hearing, we have the dangerousness finding, or the lack of thereof.
I'm sorry, are you saying he relied on the same information he had used to decide to release him? He used again to decide on a plan to medicate him?
That's correct. Well, let me go through the sequence of events. So in January, we have the lack of dangerousness finding, and we have nothing about competency, except from his treaters, for lack of a better word. The treaters think he's incompetent. So we move to March, where there's discussion about whether we medicate him or whether we don't medicate him, and then there's another hearing in May. And essentially, the lawyers are arguing I will represent that the government is arguing in response to Mr. Mann's counsel that the first prong of cell had been satisfied, the government's interest. Nobody is talking about competency, that there wasn't a finding or there should have been a finding or anything like that. All of that seems to appear, if you read the record, to be a foregone conclusion. For reasons that aren't clear, as you point out in the order, Judge Hoyt releases him without bond because there's a discussion in May, how can you put somebody on bond who's incompetent, who's delusional, because you're setting them up for failure because they can't adhere to this. And if the court looks at these hearings, there's no question that there is a problem with Mr. Mann, that a lot of what he says doesn't make sense. I mean, sometimes he's lucid, for lack of a better word. So Judge Hoyt is seeing this. Judge Hoyt has seen some letters to this effect, which is referenced in one of the docket numbers. So now he's free in May. I don't know why he wasn't kept. We don't know that. The order's not there. So then we have, you know, things are quiet, for lack of a better word, and then the regulation changes. And Mr. Sokolow's complaint is, assuming the 1992 regulations don't apply, or as I understand it, Mr. Sokolow's complaint, then there should have been a Harper hearing. But dangerousness and competency are often close, not necessarily exclusive. For example, here's an example of the real situation. Supposedly he wants to kill everybody at the federal courthouse in Houston, but he tells a mechanic he's going to do that. That doesn't really make sense. He's found with a pocket knife. And so Judge Hoyt has seen all these things and put all these things together. So to the extent that there is a concern about dangerousness under the new regulations, if Judge Hoyt had been concerned about that, then arguably a Harper hearing maybe or maybe should not have taken place. But the fact of the matter is we had already had
that. He had been concerned about what?
The dangerousness. Because Judge Hoyt...
Well, isn't that what the government talked about at the new hearing?
Well, the government had talked about his
motion,
escalating...
Not motion to reconsider. Isn't that what you talked about?
I'm sorry, say that again, please.
On your motion, not... On the motion to reconsider, which I think you're telling me is not a motion to reconsider...
Well, no, I'm not misleading the court. What I'm saying is the original motion, the discussion about that was under the first factor under Sell. It was not about whether or not he was competent. Because Mr. Mann's counsel never complained about a lack of competency finding.
And I'm asking about the hearing on the government's motion to reconsider. What was that one about?
You're talking about the August hearing?
Yeah.
Right here, I'm showing it as a hearing on the government's motion to reconsider the order denying forced medication, September 12th.
Okay, yes, I'm sorry. That's in conjunction with the August, yes.
Right.
And in that, we had a marshal come and talk about what happened in conjunction with that. As I said before, there was never any dispute about whether he was competent or incompetent. Also, there was never Let me rephrase this. Not once have I seen in the record did Mr. Mann's counsel ever ask for another Harper hearing. So we've been going down the primrose path. Everybody believes he's incompetent. Nobody's asking for a Harper hearing on incompetency. I mean, you could arguably say he's even waived that. But under the 2011 regulation, that doesn't matter because Judge Hoyt then became vested with the power to follow Sell. I mean, that was the stated purpose of the 2000 regulation, as I said before.
Let me ask something that Mr. Sokolow told Judge King, and I'll make sure that I understood it, or what you're understanding. Under the new regulation, no water under the bridge, first time the issue comes up, is there supposed to be a Harper hearing, even if only competence is being pursued? If there's never been a Harper hearing looking at Sell and what it says about encouraging a finding on dangerousness or something else before getting to the separate issue of competence. So is a Harper hearing required under the regulations before moving to Sell?
No, it is not, if it's solely for competence purposes. Now, you asked before Judge Southwick about Sell, and Sell is discretionary. I know there's case law that talks about maybe in stronger language or what have you, but this is not really the case to resolve those tensions, because here we actually had, as Gutierrez refers to those bifurcated benefits, we had his evaluators who had looked at the three cell factors and talked about meeting those three cell factors, which were never in dispute either. The only thing that Mr. Mann had ever contested was the first cell factor. So back in January, we had his treaters look at those three cell factors and propose a treatment plan. And so As I said, competency under the new regulation, you don't have to have the Harper hearing. If it was dangerousness or something else, those regulations remain intact under point 46. It's 549.46 of the new CFR.
But what strikes me about how you're describing it is it's certainly true under sale, regardless how you read the language, that the preference is to have a Harper hearing before you would be moving into competence.
I agree.
And so the regulation does not take note of that and in some other way address having a hearing on that issue before? You've already answered it, I guess. Are you sure it doesn't have something like that in the regulation?
Unless I've misread it.
Okay.
No, Your Honor. It would apply to everything but solely for competency. But, of course, what's to stop a defense counsel from asking for the hearing if they're looking out for their client?
And again, so what you're telling me is this new hearing on your motion was solely on competence, therefore no Harper hearing.
Well, I understand that the court is concerned about the word reconsider, and I understand that there's some language about dangerousness. But I also believe that Judge Hoyt's order is clear, is to restore competence. And further support for that, although this is a little unorthodox, but this whole case is a little different.
As I understand, the only thing that changed between his being released and your new hearing post the effectiveness of the new regulation, the only thing that changed was something he said to a mechanic. And you're saying that went to competence?
Yes, but again, if you look at these hearings, and this court did a limited remand in this case back in the fall. We were set for argument in November, but some concerns came up about Mr. Mann wanting to release possibly his appeal, whatever. Anyway, the point is there was a limited remand. And Judge Hoyt found on October 29, 2012, more findings on competency. He referenced the medical findings from the FCI in Fort Worth, which was obviously quite a while time. Excuse me, I can't say that right. Time ago. And Butner, concluding Mann was not competent. And after questioning him during this hearing on various topics, the court entered findings saying that he suffers from delusional thoughts and his significant factual distortions render him unable to understand the nature and consequences of the decision he makes and comes to rational conclusion. And that was on October 29th in response to this court's limited remand. And nothing about dangerousness there. And again, if you look at these hearings, much of what Mr. Mann frequently says doesn't make sense. So this
but
court,
fundamentally what you're saying is that in the round two of this case, there was no, the lawyers representing him were not urging a hearing on dangerousness and, you know, a redo of what took place in Butner. They weren't arguing for that. They were all talking about competence to stand trial.
And I would go even further by saying on the heels of Butner, after the January findings, when they go into March and they're starting to talk about involuntarily medicating him, they don't ask about another Harper hearing on incompetence because, as I mentioned, they think he is, meaning defense counsel, thinks he is incompetent. There's no question about that. And what he contended is the first cell prong had not been met. So we've been going and going and going, and now all of a sudden we're supposed to be holding another Harper hearing. However, if the court concludes that the 2011 regulations were in effect, which of course we contend that they were, then that really doesn't matter. Now, it may make us all feel more comfortable that he's had additional administrative due process rights, but he had those in January. So if this court upholds Judge Hoyt's order, then he goes, well, I think he's in Harris County right now. I'm not entirely sure about that. But then he goes back, presumably to Butner, where they then move forward. And I think common sense is such that, of course, they're going to look at all, you know, what to do and what not to do. And I've read a lot of these cases, and it seems that the treatment for this type of disorder, for the paranoid schizophrenic, is fairly uncontroversial. I mean, that there's just a primary way to treat it. So just to recap, what I'm saying is that the dangerousness and competence, there is some overlap. This is not somebody who showed up with a gun at your courthouse, Judge King. This is somebody who told a mechanic, please stop my horn from honking so I can go kill everybody. So there's a lot of gaps in his thinking, as opposed to a lot of the criminal cases this court sees where we know a person is dangerous. We may not have a medical finding to that effect, but Mr. Mann's history has been this stop and start thought process, and he has sent letters to courts and to the Supreme Court and to the VA and to me and to all kinds of people, but he's never done something dangerous that we know of. There's been a couple things where he's been caught with a weapon or what have you, but I don't believe he was prosecuted. I don't know for a fact because I don't have a PSR. So
let me ask, before the first hearing on dangerousness, did he have threats of this magnitude, I'm going to kill everybody, and the sense of the psychologists and others were he wasn't going to follow through with them? Is that why he was not perceived to be dangerous?
I think when you mean the first hearing, you mean January, or do you mean in Fort Worth?
In January.
In January, yes. The whole thing pretty much started because he had written letters to the Supreme Court and to some of these other people talking about going up in smoke and things of that nature.
Well, he may have been clear with the mechanic, but it's the same kind of threat, it seems to me, that
yes,
they were looking at back in January.
But the Butner, the evaluation for dangerousness is self-contained. In other words, can he function in this institution within these four walls? So, yes, he had a history of doing that type of thing. So, in the government's opinion, the district court complied with Sell. But even if this court finds error, it's not plain. While the analysis usually doesn't focus on the result, generally in terms of whether a hearing has been held or not held, plain error certainly looks to whether the substantial rights would have been, the outcome essentially would have been different. And we know from Judge Hoyt's most recent findings that this court directed him to enter that the result wouldn't have been different because he's still delusional. So unless the court has any additional questions, we ask that you affirm.
Thank you. Mr. Sokolow.
I hope to be brief, Your Honors. I think I have just 3 points. First, on the lack of complaint below about a Harper hearing, absolutely, there wasn't a complaint below. That's why I briefed it on plain error.
Yeah, I know.
With regard to all of a sudden we have Harper, Harper was necessary under the old regulations. Harper was necessary under Sell. Harper has been around for a long time. Finally, I would say that Mr. Mann, if you read Riggins, Harper, and Sell, you see that Mr. Mann and anyone in his position has a liberty interest not to be medicated on the basis of an improper decision. For example, to medicate him for competence when it should be dangerousness, or dangerousness when it should be competence. And that is the crux of the problem here. The crux of the problem is the decision was made to medicate him based on competence when the first question should have been, is the medical opinion that he's, do we have a medical opinion that he's dangerous or not, based on the old evidence, on the motion for reconsideration, and the new evidence. And that did not occur in this case, and I request that you reverse. Thank you so much, Your Honor.
Thank you.